I am 26. The 29th of April, 1979, to the 28th of April, 1980. Over. The Birds Sand Her Name by Trond Jervo. Once my heart was filled with love of a girl. I held her close, but she faded in the night, like a poem I meant to write, and the leaves that are green turn to grey. I was never a big fan of Simon and Garfunkel. Not to say that I thought they were shite. It's just that when Tom and Jerry reformed in 1963 as Simon and Garfunkel, the Beatles were exploding in the UK, and I was sold. I never was a big fan of Simon and Garfunkel. Paula, on the other hand, I first met Paula in a field outside of Stockholm in the early summer of 1979. She was dancing, alone, eyes closed, headphones on, and one of those brand new portable cassette players tucked down the lining of her dress. She was dancing to Leaves That Are Green, a song about the fleeting nature of time and things that come and go. To me, on that June morning in 1979, the days of folk pop ballads was most definitely gone. Nevertheless, there was something about Paula that captured me. She was a free-spirited person, open to new experiences, ideas and thoughts. Her whole being radiated a kind of vital energy that some human beings seem to possess, but most of us don't. And from the moment I saw her, I was sold. My heart was filled with the love of Paula. At this time in my life, I was really interested in ley lines and the energies that lies within. This was something that Paula also felt passionate about, and she told me about how the ley line's energy grows stronger the closer you get to the Arctic Circle. She also taught me about naiads, which is the Sami for shamans, and how they can connect to the ley line energy when they travel between the physical and the spiritual world. She told me she knew a naiad living in the north of Norway, called Memur. She then served me her homemade pizza topped with dried Liberty Cap. The mushroom was strong. Next morning, I woke up in an ocean of light. Embraced by the sun, the birds sang her name. I sat up and turned to Paula, but she was gone. In the night, I cried as I woke up. In the distance, I could hear someone singing. I was born under a wandering star. I was born under a wandering star. Wheels are made for rolling. Mules are made to pack. I've never seen a sight that didn't look better looking back. As the last sentence echoed in my mind, I realised I'd never see Paula again. I dried my tears. I threw a pebble in a brook and watched the ripples run away. Summer ended. I was back in Liverpool, roaming the streets in the wee hours doing graffiti. Still, there was an itch that needed to be scratched. I could not stop thinking about Paula and her story of the naiads. It was as if there was an invisible force pushing me to the north. So I decided to go search for Memur. Money was short, but I somehow managed to get on a boat headed for Bergen. Upon arrival, I bumped into an old childhood friend. To my surprise, I noticed that his breath smelt of Paula. My heart skipped a beat. Then I realised that the smell was of dried Liberty Cap. This became even more apparent when he opened his mouth and all the words coming out of his mouth were complete gibberish. Still, through the endless stream of words, I managed to interpret that he was on his way to the north of Norway to visit his long-time pen pal. It seemed that I'd managed to hitch a ride from Bergen to Bodø. Since my friend was in a state of mind that did not go well with driving a car, we agreed that I should drive the first leg of the journey. We jumped into his rented white Ford Transit van, and around midnight we reached Saltfjellet. We decided to pull up to rest and let the engine cool a while. As we stepped out of the car, the snow crackled under our feet. Crisp, chilly winter air. We watched the northern lights dance across the clear night sky, and in the distance I heard the longing tones of a lonely steel guitar. In the cool air of the night, I dried my tears. The next morning, we reached Bodø, did our goodbyes, and I hopped a ferry going further north. The last stop was an island called Veroy. I disembarked and headed towards the first building that caught my eye, a lighthouse. As I approached the entrance to the lighthouse, I heard a monotonous voice repeating the same words like a mantra. But pen and ink, but pen and ink, but pen and ink, but pen and ink. The words seemed to be of importance to me, but I had no clue what they meant. As I reached the entrance, the voice stopped. The lighthouse started to glow in the same colours as the northern lights the night before. I entered the lighthouse and saw a person sitting in the middle of a circular room. "Welcome to the Eye," he said. "I've been waiting for you. I am Mamur, the lighthouse keeper. That eye of all islands, jack of all trades, master of none." And then, I know what you're all thinking right now. I've sort of written this chapter in a way that builds up to this being a pivot moment, right? Thing is, though, I'm running out of words. As you know, I've constrained myself to only use 1,000 words to tell the story of 1 year lived. Thus, I won't be able to tell you the whole story of my encounter with Mamur. But that's life, isn't it? You never know when the story ends, or for that matter, when it begins, or where it takes you. Hello, 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 goodbye. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
Under, Words from the Faroe Islands by Andrew Harper. The 70s crashed down, their orbit in decay, a clapped-out, embarrassing disaster for humanity, where greed-drunk bags of bloodless meat suckered their everlasting vampiric urges on the badly aimed but attractive rage of youth. That decade I had come up from underwater, my head wet like a seal. Just as the 60s failed to paint it black, so too the 70s had promised a cornucopia of change and delivered the opposite. Predictions seemed agreed that the political pendulum was swinging toward a kind of dour fascist shopkeeping. I'll have none of it, I thought. The day the clock jerked me into the last half of my third decade, I left town in a stolen water tanker, headed for the coast. I crossed the water, Pembroke to Rosslare, heading to summer, the sea just rough enough to slow the ferry down by nearly a full hour. I got good boots, and I'm being watched by seagulls and a wayward puffin. I'm free and I can transport liquid and I'm not on any watch lists just yet. I needed a new passport and I had the address of experts in hiding. I had a good idea of what was coming, the wave of disasters that began over the Atlantic when Three Mile Island cracked open the sky and a cow was born with two heads and rudimentary wings. I'd seen peelers with snake eyes and long, long hands. Black magic and homemade explosives are the worst possible combination, and while I'd thought to dedicate time to making art, all the clocks kept stopping whenever I walked past them. 1979 is the signal. Radio waves bounced off the moon and Skylab crashed near a small town in Australia, causing a bushfire that killed a herd of black Angus. Fire from the heavens that essentially resulted in hamburger. Pathetic, I said to a congregation of sycophants outside a church. It was a wrong move. They all looked at me, and again the reptile stares and 12-inch fingers. That cemented leaving town. I was becoming noticed by a network of ridiculous paperback obsessives, a clan of knife-handed monitor lizards, and all I'd done was speak my mind. Perpetual thunderstorms and white paint floating like wet balloons. This is what I saw. I now was the responsible owner of an IRA guarantee briefcase of rare disguises and three different fake identities. I'd earned them by transporting illicit liquids that would form the basis of a failed attack on the British royal family in December, but it wasn't December yet, and while Ireland was a delight, I needed to keep moving. Ferries would appeal more later, and the water truck was best used by others now. So, bribing a trio of fishers, I joined their boat for a series of sorties into the North Sea, where the delights of haddock, the inevitability of cod, and the spry delight of mackerel were all explained to me. This knowledge, including how to speedily gut and clean fish, was useful, although I found a plastic tube containing message from a supremely annoying musician in the guts of a herring. I left my oilskin-clad companions for the coast of Scotland. They'd been a good crew, and I regretted not being truthful with them. In disguise, I headed north, by foot, until I was able to liberate a bicycle in Campbelltown. Bastard of a place, but the view was good, and I found that the fine spirit gum held my new distracting features in place, even in a relatively high wind. It was good to get on the move. 1980 was leering at everyone like a drunken randy stockbroker. The new decade promised much, but I knew that it was going to deliver the most banal and tedious apocalypse anyone had yet dreamed of. I could tell the end of the world was likely to be quite predictable and even a touch awkward. I understood it would stretch out over decades, that it would be tedious, that it would feature repetition and not even be spectacular. More like being buffed with extremely fine sandpaper until blood emerged like fine beads of ruby sweat. Scotland is gorgeous in winter, as long as you have decent shoes, and I made sure some were acquired. The ease of theft convinced me I was doing no such thing, and perhaps I wasn't, but no one seemed to notice my dribble of petty crime, ghost-like, since the tanker, and now into a van after the bike proved impractical. I bypassed towns entirely, but got disturbing radio signals from a crystal set fashioned in a plastic lunchbox. It could be static, but it sounded like rhythmic hissing and clicking. Nothing like terror to really motivate a man. I closed on the crofts of the northern coast and soon to the island chains. I spent the new year in a bed and breakfast in Thurso, and at midnight I silently walked a circle around the Dounreay nuclear power plant and told it quietly to ignore Three Mile Island and not get any ideas. I had a destination in mind and would get there as best I could. Storms necessitated slower progress, but ferry services are well established in the Orkneys and discreet in their deployment. I was forced to commandeer a robust fishing vessel to get to the Faroe Islands, and here I've been ever since, silently inhabiting a repeating sequence of sheds. I have spoken 5 times. I keep mum as much as possible. Voices create echoes, even here. Thus far, I have blended in, using my disguise kit, but in recent days, the length of my fingernails has seemed somewhat odd, and I have avoided mirrors. Tomorrow, I shall be as old as Jimmy, Janice and Jim. Why do people think of the age and not the letter as a curse? I wondered.